Hazy, cool, 55 degrees here at Detroit Golf Club as we wake up to a Pro-Am Wednesday at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Tony Finau teeing off with his amateur group at 6:45. Colin Morikawa, one of the other major marquee names, will be teeing off on hole number 10 at the same time. So if you want to see two of the big luminaries out here, including the defending champion, you'll want to get out early. Yesterday we brought you news that the prosecutors in Oakland County had filed a evidentiary document with the Supreme Court that seems to indicate what they call a much stronger, what they call consciousness of guilt for James and Jennifer Crumbly, the parents that are being charged with involuntary manslaughter charges. As they try to block those charges, the prosecutors are saying, no, the case is even stronger than we thought it was. We wanted to get reaction to that with our good friend Todd Flood, attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, who has occupied both sides of the criminal justice system, both as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney. Todd, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Guy. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Help us understand this idea of consciousness of guilt and why it's such a powerful statement for the prosecutors in this case. Apparently, Jennifer Crumbly has told investigators that she never really looked at those drawings that were, what I think, would have alarmed any reasonable parent in any other circumstance, that she didn't really care about them or didn't appear to be. How important is that for the prosecution's case?
I think it's important when you put two things together. 8 months prior to saying I didn't look to those drawings, she gives notice to her husband via Facebook, you know, something to the effect, our son is in trouble, he's in peril, in essence, I paraphrase, go pick him up from school. So add the two together, right? You find that she knows her child is in not in the right state of mind and has spiraling basically out of control. Then she says, well, really, I don't care about the drawings. When you take those two things and you put them together, it's so foreseeable for the person to say, for the reasonable person to say, are you kidding me? You give this child a gun? So the consciousness, the lack of care, the lack of ordinary care, you have to understand we don't prosecute these cases. This is the exception to the rule. We don't prosecute parents for the criminal acts of their children, except for in situations, in this rare situation, where you take and give a gun to a child that you know is in peril, and then you don't give a reasonable look, an ordinary care, just the it's almost like a heedless soul, doesn't, you know, harm to others or to himself. I think that consciousness of guilt is going to be very potent, very powerful for the prosecution in their opening, closing, and in the evidence.
Todd, this is Lloyd Jackson. Good morning.
Hey,
you know,
good morning,
Lloyd. You talked about the gun, and that's another thing, because, you know, when the parents fled and went to Detroit and they found them in that warehouse, you know, before they left, they grabbed the receipt to the gun. I mean, why would you grab the receipt to the gun, you know, when you're trying to flee? And why would that be something you want to take out?
Well, you know, the only other thing they could have taken is the gun, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, you know, they're taking evidence. They're taking evidence. Why do you take evidence? For none other than to either destroy, hide. They may try to come up with some innocent excuse. You know, I had it in the car. I left it in the car, and I didn't forgot all about the fact that it was in the car or, you know, wherever it was found. But that's their defense. The opposite side of that, the flip side of that is simply, are you kidding me? You know, they take pieces of the evidence with them to either destroy or make sure law enforcement can't find. Now, they know they're on the lam, right? And they know there's going to be, you know, people searching their home with search warrants and looking for them, and they're going to be gathering evidence. One thing they take, I purchased the gun for my kid. I take that receipt because I don't want others to find it. So that'll be used, obviously and clearly, for the prosecution in this case. The court, the Supreme Court, you know, it's tea leaf reading whether or not they hear this case or not, to show an abuse of discretion by the district court in finding this case over. I think due process is going to happen, and this case is going to go to a jury trial. And when it does, all those pieces of evidence are going to go in front of the jury.
Yeah, and again, this is somewhat of a precedent-setting case, and it will set perhaps a new standard of accountability for parents in these school shooting cases. Todd, another thing that I wanted to get your take on, yesterday the Supreme Court overturned the conviction of a stalker in Colorado, basically saying that what he was engaged in was free speech, at least under Colorado's law, and there is some concern that it may make it easier for stalkers to stalk because it isn't going to be in the mind of the victim to determine whether or not they feel threatened. The new standard is going to be whether the speaker knew that their speech was threatening. How much of a shift is that in the criminal justice standard, and could it give cover to people to make threatening speech?
So it's an interesting case and a big ruling, but it's an objective standard. So you're looking at it from what a person, not in the shoes of the victim, not in the shoes of how the person was perceiving this speech, but you take it from what a reasonable person outside, an objective look of was this speech, was this threatening behavior and the like.
Right.
And that's going to be, I think, tested along the line. However, Guy, I don't think my, you know, prosecutors, we're going to know the difference as oftentimes when we prosecute these cases or when we defend these cases, when a prosecutor looks at the factors and says, is it reasonable to believe from an objective standpoint that that person would be intimidated, afraid, in fear of life threat or harm, and how continuous was it? Was it one time? Was it two time? In Michigan, we have a threat of harm or injury. And so here, you know, you're going to see stalkers are predominantly, they don't, you know, it's not just a one-time offense. We want to nip it in the bud. We want to make it stop, you know,
right,
before it becomes something more.
That's great context, Todd. Thanks very much. Thanks for being with us and for your perspective on both the Crumbleys and that case as well. Have a great morning. We appreciate it.